Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Friday, Friday, Friday is my favorite. Friday is my favorite. Friday is my favorite day. At least that's what my Spanish 1 teacher used to sing to us every Friday back in high school. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today, a part 2 episode. And you might wonder, where's part 1? Today, for Free For All Friday, it's what to do when disaster strikes. I'm someone who enjoys being prepared, facing whatever the world might happen to throw at me, including calamitous disasters. And I thought I would share some of those tips with you all in this podcast as well. This is a part 2 episode. Part 1 actually is an interview that I did with Mr. Cy Kellett for the Catholic Answers Radio Club, where we talked about a different set of disasters, earthquakes, fires, lots of other scary things that might come about at you, and what to do in those situations and why I'm a little bit quirky in this regard. If you'd like to hear that, you can either become a member of the Catholic Answers Radio Club, going to CatholicAnswersLive.com, or you can become a premium subscriber, make a donation at TrenthornPodcast.com for as little as $5 a month. You can help this podcast expand into new media formats. We're on the cusp of filming and doing video, lots of other really great elements, very excited about, and you get access to bonus content like that and other resources to help edify you and build up your Catholic faith, available at TrentHornPodcast.com. I do want to apologize to listeners that yesterday we did not have an episode. I am striving extremely hard to make this a daily podcast, but you know, sometimes life just throws things at you and they are not calamitous disasters. It is not a literal tsunami coming at you. It's just one thing after another life throws at you. But let me just tell you about my day yesterday, and you can understand. So I go to the motor vehicle department, and I need to get a new license. I've been needing a new license since I got here and moved back to California, and I did not want to wait for 4 hours or whatever it can take at the DMV or MVD here. I think it's MVD, whatever it may be, the motor vehicle department. Didn't want to wait. So I made an appointment. You know, I made an appointment way back when I first got here, like in June. You know how long I had to wait to get that appointment? 3 months. That was when their first appointment was available. 3 months. So wait my 3 months. I go down to the MVD. I like DMV. Don't you? I bet if we did a survey across the country, most people would say the place you go to get your license is the DMV. But so I'm going to say that. I go to the DMV. I got my passport, got my social security card, ready to get my license. And our computers aren't working to process your passport. We'll have to schedule you for another appointment. I say, well, when will that be? Next one's available in 2 months. So yesterday I go. I've waited 5 months to get my driver's license. I waltz in there. Everything's working out fine. I go to take the test. 36 question written test. And I think to myself, I had been driving for, 15 years. Driven over probably at least over 100,000 miles in that time. I understand the rules of the road. I understand traffic laws. This should be just fine. How hard could this be? No, I did not study. My better half, when she studied for this test, actually literally studied for this thing. No, I went in there and I failed the test. I could not believe it. I was shaking in anger, thinking, How could I fail something like this? And I was mad because the test was not fair. It was not a test about whether you know how to drive. It was a test of whether you read the DMV's 132-page manual. Because they asked the most... Let me tell you this, listener. Are you a good driver? I bet you're probably a good driver. Can you answer this question? True or false? For example, if you evade a peacetime officer, pick one of these two choices, a peace officer, you mean a police officer, Mr. Politically Correct, state of California. If you resist, you know, traffic stop, you run from the police, you can be punished with either a fine of no more than $1,000 or no more than a year in jail. Now, running from the police is super serious. And me, I'm thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't quite, okay, no more than $1,000 fine, no more than a year in jail. I would think running from the police, you know, you could be in there longer than a year in jail. And so I get that question wrong that, oh, well, no, it's you can two, three, 5 or 8 years in prison, right, or no more than a year in the county jail. The question depended on you knowing the difference between the sentencing for prison versus county jail. Or here's another one. Is this statement true? All medicines can impair you when you drive. My wife's a nurse. She says that's not true. Now, if it had said any medicine can impair you, if that's what they meant, I could see that. And so my wife is probably like, Trent, get over it. If she's listening to this, she's probably saying that right now. Get over it. You failed the test. Everyone fails things every now and then. So then I get a second attempt. I just go into the back of the DMV. I spend about 20 minutes reading that manual. Go back and take the test. But, you know, there's questions like, you know, what is this sentencing procedure for this crime? They're all designed to see if you read the ins and outs of the manual. So that ate up much more of my day. And then I get a bill from the county. Oh, thank you, Government of California, saying I owe an astronomical supplemental tax on my home because of Prop 13 that I had no idea about when it comes to the purchase of a home. So those are not disasters. Those are, of course, inconveniences. And what I said to my wife, I said, look, I would rather have lost a little bit of time, lost some money. Money is just numbers on a screen. You know, I'd rather lose those things than lose peace in our home, than lose one of you, than lose something very precious to me. And that's sometimes what we have to do when the world throws rough stuff at us, to say, well, it can always be worse. Or, you know, I have my faith, I have my God, I have my family, I have my health. Even though sometimes you don't have those things, sometimes the absence of those things makes us appreciative of what we do have. And so that's what we have to look at. So, listener, I guess when I was doing the podcast a little bit more, I gave you a little bit more insight of what was going on in the Horn household. And now you know what was driving me up the wall yesterday. Though I am grateful to one of our staff members here at Catholic Answers. She donated free tacos to everybody. So at least I got my taco. Taco Thursday. Throwback Taco Thursday? Maybe. I'm not sure. So in this episode, I want to talk about what do you do in a real disaster when things are falling down around you as an emergency. People could die. People could be injured. And I'm one of those people who favors this proverb, luck favors the prepared. I was reading a book once on disasters, and this description in the book really stuck with me. They said that there are three kinds of people in a disaster. There are the people who live. There are the people who will die no matter what. They were goners. And there are people who could have lived if they had done the right thing or if they had been prepared. And so that's the thing for a lot of us in a situation. It doesn't have to be a full-scale disaster. It could be, you know, your automobile plunges into a canal or a body of water. You become trapped somewhere. There's a fire, whatever it may be. Most times when we are in a situation, for most people, I think the default response for a lot of people, you know, there's fight, flight, or freeze. I'm fight. I've almost punched people because of my fight reflex. The default response for most people is freeze, I think. That when they're in a situation that's unfamiliar and dangerous or threatening, they panic and they freeze because their brain simply can't process what to do at this moment. And so what protects us in disasters, whether they're big scale or small scale, whether it's safety around the home, at the office, or being prepared for something really bad happening, is that by preparing, by practicing, panic doesn't set in. That's why pilots who are really good when things fall apart for pilots, they have done checklists. They have practiced for these procedures over and over and over and over again. And the ones who have practiced and have put in that training, they've got those nerves of steel and they're able to apply them in the actual scenario. I remember I was on the Catholic Answers cruise not too long ago. It was the one to Alaska. And so in my little cabin, I went by myself. We debated, my wife and Matthew coming with me. Matthew was probably about 6 months old at the time. But I just could not put them through that in a little 300 square foot cabin with a little, he would have been just barely 6 months old. That's the minimum age to travel. I said, nah, I don't want to put him through that. So I had a little space to myself, which maybe was good because on my couch at night, I had laid out my life jacket, a headlamp, and a jacket, clothes, shoes. And listeners to this podcast, I even practiced putting those things on at night in the dark to see if I could put them on. What if something happened? What if the ship loses power? There's no lights. What are you going to do? Well, I would be prepared. Say, okay, go put this on. I've got my headlamp. I have a light. Go up two flights of steps, turn right on the muster deck at the lifeboat station, ready to go. And when you look at other situations like naval maritime disasters, like the Costa Concordia, the crew themselves, they were panicking. A lot of times on these cruise ships, they are registered, they're running flags from like Panama. They have crew that from all over the world who may not speak English, who are not, and some of these cruise lines, not necessarily trained in evacuation and safety procedures. That's what happened on the Costa Concordia. The crew started to panic. Some of them and the captain, they abandoned the ship. And others were saying, it's fine, go back to your cabins, it's fine, when it's not fine. So a lot of times when you're in trouble, the person you want to be able to depend on is you, that you've thought this through and you've prepared. So when it comes to any kind of disaster, calamity, emergency, luck favors the prepared. Sometimes you get dealt a bad hand. You know, God didn't want to bless us with fortune in that moment. Okay, that's fine. But sometimes we do have an opportunity, and being prepared is key. So let me talk about some of these situations. The ones I want to focus on that I not cover in my show with Mr. Syke Hellett, I want to talk about ones that are kind of weather-related and one that's kind of more of a terrorism-related disaster and what you need to know. But in all of these are big-scale disasters that can leave you without basic services, emergency services for days, possibly weeks. What do you do? In most of these situations, it's really good at home to have something called a bug-out bag, B-U-G bag, a bug-out bag. Preppers and other disaster people have been, they've had this kind of stuff for a long time. I said this was Mr. Syke Hellett. I'm not a prepper. I'm not somebody who's completely prepared for doomsday. Like, I don't have a bunker with 2 years worth of supplies or something like that. But I do believe in having minimal supplies to ride out a short period where you don't have basic services. So a bug out bag is just something you have in your home that if you have to leave, and you should usually keep your car, keep it above half a tank. If you have at least a half a tank, you can get clear of an area or at least get to an area where there's gas for you to move on, except in very extraordinary evacuation scenarios. But having one, supplies at home are important. And number two, having something you can just take it in a backpack or a bin. And that would be things like food and water, enough to last you 3 days. You don't need a backpack. You can have just a big two plastic bins in your garage. Throw them in your car when you need them. Be food, water, clothing, local roadmaps. Because here's the thing. Let's say you're trying to evacuate and get out of an area. Your cell phone may not work if cell phone towers are destroyed. Maybe if you have a GPS unit that relies on satellite, it might still be okay. But if you don't know where you're going, you might not have roadmaps or a road atlas to get around where you're at. Other things like spare clothes, some sleeping bags in the garage next to this are very helpful. Lights, headlamps, lanterns, anything that has solar charging capabilities is good, including a solar cell phone charger. Duct tape and rope, never hurt to have that. Duct tape can fix a million things, and having a multi-tool. A weapon, if you have one, because honestly, when disaster strikes and the social system breaks down, being able to protect yourself is incredibly important, because when you take away 911, when you take away electricity, people kind of go back to the Stone Age in their behavior. They become primitive. They can become lawless, and you might not have anyone else to rely on in these situations to protect yourself. So the other thing that's helpful in not just survival gear and not just at your home, something that a lot of people, when they face disasters, for example, this first disaster I want to talk about are tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, what to do in these situations. A lot of times when something comes that wipes out your home, the thing that hurts the most, that hurts the absolute most for people to lose is not their stuff, it's their mementos. It's old antique pictures, video and pictures and film of recitals and get-togethers, memories, other souvenirs, things that have been given away, the memorabilia from important stages of one's life. Those are the things that can't be replaced. I mean, if your house gets knocked down, hopefully you have home insurance, flood insurance. You can get a house and furniture back. It's not that hard. I mean, it sucks, but you can get that back. But a lot of those personal elements you can't. So what I believe in when it comes to things like pictures that are great, people want to archive, and this is just, you could just have a miniature disaster that if you have all your family photos, this happened to a friend of mine. He kept everything on one hard drive and the hard drive died on him. He had to go to a computer tech person, spent like $800 to recover the data from it. Back up your information, personal financial records, information on insurance policies, other things like that, pictures, memorabilia on a hard drive. If you have it on one hard drive, get it on another hard drive as soon as possible. Hook them both up to your computer, hit backup on it, send it across, and you'll be thankful. And keep the backup copy in a separate place, either in an online cloud storage system, or keep a hard drive, keep one hard drive at your office that has these important documents and family photos and memories in it. Keep one at your office, keep one at your home. And then if you're really paranoid and want to hang on to this stuff, do your home, your office, and maybe something online at a cloud storage facility in case your whole town gets wiped out by something. But that's what I've seen when people I've known who've gone through disasters, that's the things that they miss the most. So being able to back any of that up, scanning pictures, scanning old photographs, if you got those old ultrasound photos, get them digital, save them, back them up two separate locations. You will be grateful if something ever happens that you at least still have those things. Now, on to the disasters. Tornadoes. I used to live in the Midwest for 2 years. Some listeners may not be in areas that are tornado prone. Other people may have done this drill way more than I have. But I remember actually being foolish, young, and unmarried, going out and chasing these things with a friend. We used our cell phones to have mobile Doppler radar in the car, and we would chase. We were at the head of the chasing party because we had the mobile radar. We knew exactly where the storm was going. Once we saw the tornado touch the ground, and then it went right back up again. And then as we drove home, actually, we hit a shelf wall of rain, and we hydroplaned 720-degree spin on the road. But the Lord spared us, both of us, to go on to have families and do good work for the kingdom. So what you should do with a tornado, follow the news alerts. If there's a watch, be aware. If there is a warning, take shelter. A warning means a tornado has been sighted in your area and is near. The safest place when it comes for a tornado would probably be in a basement or a storm cellar, a strengthened one, either underground. They have newer ones that are above ground, heavily strengthened. If you can't, because some areas have a high water table, so you can't build a cellar because you'll hit groundwater. Any kind of a storm cellar, if you don't have that, a basement. If you don't have a basement and a tornado's coming, an interior room without windows, a bathroom can be very good. One thing you can do is get into the tub. If you have a bicycle helmet, take some helmets with you. Strap some helmets on. Put a mattress on top of the bathtub, like a little twin mattress, like a kid's twin bed. Grab it, throw it on top of you. The goal is you want to protect yourself from falling debris. Most injuries occur, fatalities especially, when there's falling debris, there's a crushing injury or usually some kind of traumatic head injury are the injuries that tend to be fatal. So protecting your head and protecting yourself in an interior room if a tornado comes through. Do not try to flee in a vehicle unless you can get to a safe place quickly, because in a vehicle offers you no protection. I know some people, they heard an overpass was a safe place, so they got in their car and drove from their house to a freeway overpass, and then thinking, oh, I'll be okay, and then they got, in their car, they were killed. When a freeway overpass works if you have no other shelter. If you have absolutely no other shelter, even lying in a ditch can help you, lying face down with your hands over your head. But getting into an overpass, there's that famous video of people, the tornado goes right by them, and luckily they were graced by the tornado. It's still very, very dangerous, not as good as getting into an actual interior room. Second, I used to have the old Encyclopedia Britannica. No, it was Funk and Wagnalls Encyclopedia. And this myth was in there. I remember it as a child reading this in that encyclopedia. Now, some people listening are saying, what's an encyclopedia? Wikipedia? What's an encyclopedia? So in that encyclopedia, you might have heard this myth before, that a tornado explodes houses because the pressure inside the tornado, the air pressure, is lower than the air pressure in a home. And so the home essentially has an explosive decompression, so you should open the windows to equalize the pressure. That is not what happens. The tornado is just moving very, very fast, winds could be hundreds of miles an hour, and the homes get knocked over because the wind is pushing it down or it's throwing debris in it. It's not about equalizing pressure. Do not waste time opening your windows. If you've heard that old advice, that's just a myth. That's going to get you killed or seriously hurt or increase your property damage. So that's at least just for a tornado. And then, of course, afterwards, once the tornado is cleared, you'll want to make sure just basic utilities, watch out for gas leaks, make sure gas is turned off, watch out for down power lines. So minimize your movement and work with, you know, emergency services and gather your supplies to try to assess your situation and see what you have to work with. Another disaster to talk about are hurricanes and floods. Hurricanes, of course, if you're more on a coastal area, especially the Atlantic, you deal with this more. Flooding, many, many Americans live in floodplains near flood dangers. And both of these share a same common thing, that the biggest danger in a hurricane is usually not the winds, though the winds can be very damaging, especially if you're outside and, you know, you're hit by debris. The thing that's usually the most damaging is the flooding in a hurricane, either from intense rainfall or from the storm surge. It's usually the water that kills people in hurricanes, not the wind. So this is, you know, what do you do with deadly water inundating your area? Well, at least with a hurricane, you've got fair warning, more so usually than most floods. Evacuate as early as you can. If you get on the road late, you could be stuck on the highway with everybody else. Once you see that a hurricane is even, you know, 72 hours out and they're tracking its course, get that gas tank full. You do not want to be the last people going there. I don't care how late it is at night and you're tired. Get out there. Keep, just as a rule of thumb, in general, don't ever let your tank get below half. It's just a good rule of thumb. And be able to evacuate early. And if you've lost phone coverage already, try to call friends and say, hey, I read about this. Some people are evacuating the hurricanes in Florida recently. They had friends who called for them, called a bunch of different hotels to try to find them a place to stay, because you might have to sleep in your car if all the evacuees are going to these different hotels. So try to get friends and family who are not in the disaster area. They can maybe call hotels for you, try to find anything that's open for you to evacuate. But you'll want to, if you cannot evacuate and you have to kind of ride it out, you'll want to keep supplies handy. And the biggest things you're going to need are fresh water and antiseptics. One of the biggest dangers in flooding is that when the flooding happens, the water hits the sewers and everything in the sewers comes up. So you've got raw sewage, you have chemicals, that water is dirty and filthy, and you can get pretty sick from that. And so you can't trust it, really. So you want to make sure you have your own fresh water, whether it's big jugs you have at your house that you can keep there, or before the flooding happens, don't fill up your bathtub. That water will spoil probably, or it'll get nasty pretty quick. I talked about this with Mr. Sykellet. Get a water bob. A water bob is a really great thing. It allows you to hook up to a faucet, fill it's a big bag basically that fills a water bladder, fills your bathtub with 60, 100 gallons of water. Then you can seal it off from the tub, from the faucet, and it has a little siphon to get the water out. So now you've got fresh water in a tub that's sealed that will be preserved for several weeks or months if you needed it, but it'll, you know, that would only last you probably a few weeks if you needed it. So keeping that, and then also antiseptics in case, you know, you do get a cut, get a scrape, you can clean it. A lot of times in our disaster kits, we focus only on, well, I got to make sure I have my food and water. Those are important, but I would probably rank it water, medical supplies, food. You can last a few weeks without food if you needed to, but you'll need it to keep your wits about you. Water's one of your most important things there. After a day without it, you're really going to be hurting. Water, including both fresh water and means of purifying water. Iodine tablets are very helpful. Life straws. There's a thing called the life straw. If you happen to be out and about and you have to drink what might be dirty water, it's got an amazing filter within it, can allow you to drink almost any water you come across outside of your home. So having water purifiers are helpful. And that's why also having fire starting equipment, matches, flints. And the most important thing there is not just cooking food. I mean, ideally, if you have canned food, you could eat it right out of the can. Don't forget an extra can opener, by the way. You don't want to have a ton of canned food and you can't find the can opener. I have two can openers. Water, you could use that. You could start a fire outside. Don't start a fire inside. You don't want to die of carbon monoxide poisoning if you don't have gas or electricity. And use your pot so that you can boil water. Water's going to be your first thing. Then after that, medicine, having cleaning supplies, gauze, bandages. That way you get a cut, clean it immediately. Also keeping around gloves and just spare plastic bags. A lot of times for disaster prep, it's just keeping around spare things you normally don't think of until you can't go to the store to get it that will help you stay clean and stay healthy. If the water's rising, though, make sure before the flood or the hurricane hits, turn off your utilities. Turn off the electric panel on your home. The electric's the biggest thing you'll want to turn off. That way there's no shorts or anything like that. And then get to higher ground. If you're stuck, you're surrounded by water. If you have to keep getting higher, make sure you have an axe with you. Don't go into an attic unless you have a way out of there. There's people who drowned in Katrina who went into attics thinking they'd be safe and the water kept rising. And some, the ones who lived, had axes with them so they could cut through the roof. If you're not sure you can get out of your attic, instead go out a second floor window or use a ladder, just get up on the roof itself. And hopefully you can bring some bright colored clothes you can use as a signaling device. Finally, then, if you have to evacuate from your home and try to find shelter somewhere else or move to higher ground, if you're walking through floodwaters, you got to be careful. There could be live power lines, animals, snakes, gators. And also another danger is that sometimes floodwaters will cause manhole covers to open, to fly off or drift away. So you could be walking and then fall through a manhole cover into the sewer and you'll drown. So walking with a pole, finding anything you can use as a pole or walking stick in front of you to know if there's a sudden change in the depth of the water you're walking and it goes from knee length to over your head. That way you don't get swept away. Finally, as if I haven't scared you enough already, what to do? I've talked about natural disasters. Here's one. It's a bit of an outlier, but who knows, especially if you live in a major city. What to do in a nuclear attack? Nuclear bomb goes off. You see the flash. What do you do? Well, those old films, the civil defense films from the 1950s, they're actually not that bad. Duck and cover. You'll want to get down, cover your head, close your eyes after the flash, and try to just stay down until the blast wave goes past you. And that will cause heat damage. It's, you know, wind damage. But the biggest thing you'll have to worry about for your safety is not that initial blast. Well, I mean, if you're right near the epicenter, well, you might not have that much hope for you. But you never know that you can take shelter immediately. It depends on the warning you have. It might be instantaneous. You might have a few minutes warning. If that's the case, if you do have warning, try to get to an interior of a building away from windows. But once the blast clears, you have to know you have 10 to 12 minutes to make a plan here. There's radioactive fallout in the air. It'll settle and it could cause cancer, long-term health risks, or if it's high enough, the radiation will kill you. So what do? You could try to flee the area if you have a vehicle that's operating and the roads are not clogged. That's one option. You don't know where the fallout's drifting, so that's still risky. You could get stuck somewhere and a vehicle won't provide radiation protection. So that's one thing to keep in mind there. Also, your car may not work. If a nuclear device goes off, there's a thing called an electromagnetic pulse. That EMP will short-circuit a lot of electronics. Your cell phone may not work. Most electronics probably won't work after a nuclear attack. The car, if it relies on electronics, has a computer chip inside. That'll be fried. It might not start. So be prepared that if it happens, you'll have to just hunker down in a building. You have 10 to 12 minutes. What do? Interior. The goal with radiation is to put as much matter between you and the particles as you can. The more matter, the more you're protected. So 3 feet of earth will protect you as much as 4 inches of lead. So the most safest place you could be is a basement. If you can get in a basement and stay there for 24 to 48 hours, the radioactive particles will begin to decay outside and it'll be safer for you to leave. So, oh, by the way, at the EMP, if you are super nerdy, you could always build, if you want to keep little radios or electronics to help you, if you build a device called a Faraday cage, it's like a wire mesh cage, it'll protect your electronics from an EMP pulse. I know, that's pretty over the top. I get that. But something to know. But the goal is if the bomb goes off, you'll want to take cover, put as much matter between you and the particles as you can. If you are outside and some of it might be on your clothes, hop in the shower, shower off, take the clothes off, leave the clothes outside. Anything that could have these dust particles on you, get them off of you. Get inside as interior a room as you can. The best places, if you can't find a basement, would be the interior of something like an office building or an apartment complex, as many walls as you can between you and the fallout outside to protect you. And then you wait it out. That's where if you have that bug out bag and those supplies, you're going to be doing a lot better. You're going to have, if you have 72 hours worth of food and water ready and you're just sitting there waiting, you'll be doing a lot better than other people. And of course, I don't mean to scare a lot of you. Well, odds are you won't need to use these tips. But it doesn't hurt to be prepared. It doesn't hurt to know you've done the best to protect yourself, protect your family, and to be prepared. But to know, you know what, life, you could prepare all you want. The thing is, we can prepare for anything. Eventually, the Grim Reaper is going to find us. That's the way it is. So the ultimate preparation, of course, dear friends and listeners to this podcast, make sure you are right with the Lord. Am I in a state of grace? Am I remaining in a state of grace? Because it's great if you can survive a disaster. But if death is, if you're looking death square in the eye, if you have a moral certainty to know, you know, Lord, I haven't always done the right thing. Even the if the Bible says even the just man stumbles seven times a day, but I have a reasonable hope in you that I've remained in a state of grace, and I just pray for your mercy. Lord, have mercy on me. I say this prayer all the time before I have to do something. I say, Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And just to know that ultimately the most important prep you do is for your soul. Make sure you're prepared to meet your maker on Judgment Day. And if you've done that preparation, well, it's just bonus points if you're able to withstand anything the world might throw at you after that. So I hope that was helpful for you all. And if you would like to hear part one of this interview, where I go into even more detail about preparation and some other disasters I didn't cover, I think you'll enjoy that from the Catholic Answers Radio Club, or become a premium subscriber, make a donation at TrentHornPodcast.com. You guys are the best. Thanks for hanging out with me and having mercy on me, knowing the week I've had. Sorry I didn't get an episode yesterday. We'll have something good for you on Monday. Take care, and I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.